hear the work that we've been doing for quite some time now. And so I want to first of all say hello and thank you so much to Justine, who is the chair of the sponsorship committee that I've been sitting on for quite some time, and also to Sue V, who is a member of our committee and has been extraordinarily helpful to us in the work we've done. So what I want to do is share with you a little bit about where we are right now in our work. At some point in the future, we will be creating a survey to ask you to give us back some feedback on where we are and where we're going. So in the year 2017, the members of ACA voted at a business meeting to clarify two words, sponsor and fellow traveler. And the reason was because both words appear in the Big Red Book, but they are sometimes used in a confusing way. Are they the same thing? Are they different? Is one preferable to the other? So we started off looking at vocabulary. And actually, for the first year or so, the committee was embroiled in a fairly strong debate about sponsorship versus fellow traveler, which was better, et cetera. Things shifted for us, fortunately, when we started to look at the what and not the who. And by that, I mean, we started to look at what is the nature of support, why is it important, and what are the different ways in which we support ourselves in our program without necessarily categorizing it as one thing or another. And that led us to a broad-based conversation, which has resulted in what is at the moment a 50-page document. I'm sure we will clarify and shorten it at some point, but on the other hand, maybe it will be even longer. I don't know. So we recognize that the Big Red Book says on page 125 that one should, quote unquote, get a sponsor. And we also recognize that over the years since the Big Red Book was written, ACA members have found a variety of different working relationships that sometimes involve what they might call a sponsor and sometimes do not. And so that is one of the issues we address. What we've concluded so far, and I want to just give you some of the highlights of our conclusions and then share with you that short excerpt that we've put together for you to take a look at. The first conclusion we came to is that there is no one right relationship in ACA. We explore a number of different relationships, ranging from two newcomers working together, which is often called fellow traveler, to the more traditional experienced ACA acting in what we might think of as a sponsor-sponsee relationship. But we also emphasize that support comes from many relationships, from attending meetings, from ACA fellowship, from attending step groups, and that this range of ways can include two newcomers working together. It can include two ACAs with a lot of experience working together. It could involve working with a mentor or working in a step study group or laundry list group, et cetera. So the other important takeaway is that one does not need years of experience to help somebody else in program, that supporting each other helps us both grow, and that the notion that I have to have 10 years of recovery before I'm ready to sponsor doesn't help any of us in program. We also emphasize that a sponsor or whatever supporter in program should be gentle, loving, and kind, recognizing that we are all equal and deserving of recovery. So any notion that the sponsor is an authority figure, someone who should be telling the sponsee what to do, we have decided that that is really not appropriate in the adult-child relationship because, as you know, we're afraid of authority figures. And in fact, that's one of the things that keeps people away from sponsorship. So we also looked at the different ways we can work together, and we decided that there's no one right way to begin. I know many people believe that you should start with the steps. But in talking it through, we decided that sometimes if we don't start with reparenting work or feeling work or grief work, the steps won't help us because we won't be able to bring our full selves to working the steps, that we actually need to be able to feel that we've done a lot of our feeling work, that we have feelings to bring to the steps. And so again, we're not saying, you know, recovery must go in lockstep this way and you must start with the steps. We really recognize that there's a lot of variation in what works for different people. And we certainly found that in talking to different people in the group itself. Finally, we recognize that many people in ACA want a sponsor and cannot find one. The purpose of our document is not to find sponsors for people, but it is to show people what's already available to you that you might not be recognizing, and also to show people who might be able to offer support that you don't need to be afraid to come out of isolation, offer help to someone else, take a few risks, because that's how we grow in relationship. We really, when you think about it, so much of my ACA issue is I don't know how to have relationships. And that's what supporting each other is all about. It's about being in relationship. And a lot of the issues in relationship, yes, will show up in the sponsor relationship or the supporter relationship. So we have a whole section in our document that talks about what can go wrong. And if it goes wrong, what can we do to get ourselves back on track and to fix that? And you're not going to be shocked to know that the first big piece of that is communication, right? Is not keeping secrets, being willing to tell the truth, being willing to say if our feelings are hurt, et cetera. So we're really excited to share with you a little bit of what we've come up with. And I'm going to attempt to share my screen with you and show you an excerpt. Okay. So you can see the big word draft. This is definitely a draft. And as I say, it is on our CT-ACA website. We hope fairly soon it will also be on the World Service website posted under literature in production. There is an actual line item for that. It hasn't gotten there yet, but that's our hope. Our working title. This is just a working title. Thank you, Justine, who came up with the word connections. Connections, a guide to giving and receiving support in ACA recovery. Now, again, by the time you finally see it with a cover on it, the title may look differently, but we liked the word connections. And we liked the word giving and receiving. And we liked the word support, and we liked the fact that it's support in recovery. So all those things together led us to come up with this title. You see the graphic. Bonnie created that in one of her magic machines. And this graphic is an amalgamation of some of the benefits that we discuss in a support relationship, that we can build self-esteem, we can make and keep commitments, we can release shame, we can release people-pleasing, we can practice honest communication. So I really like I love the graphics. I think they work very well. And again, she just took a whole list that we had created of benefits of the support relationship and put them in a graphic.
5 minutes.
Thank you. So there's a note to you about the draft excerpt. It also indicates that we will at some point have a survey for you to react to it. And the table of contents of the full document does appear in this excerpt. Our hope is that when you look at the table of contents, you'll say, wait a minute, you forgot something. There's something that's missing, because sometimes that happens. We're working so hard, we just forget that we've lost a basic thing. The note on terminology, I think, is really, really important. Please take a look at it. Basically, it says what I just said, which is that we are using the word support rather than the word sponsor. And actually, we're viewing sponsor as a verb, not a noun, which means in this last section here, we focus less on sponsor as a noun, meaning a person, and more as a verb, meaning a relationship. So to sponsor someone is to support them in their recovery and also, of course, receive some support yourself. And that's kind of the framework that we're coming from. Then please take a look at the range of ways of working with others in recovery. It starts with, two newcomers working together, but basically it refers to the things I was mentioning before, that we want gentleness, humor, love, and respect in our relationship, that we want to recover from a dysfunctional upbringing in the context of this relationship, and that support is critical to being able to recover. So, A was working basically with someone with much more experience, that would be your traditional sponsor. Working with someone with similar experience could be either newcomers, or it could be people with much more experience. But it's also a model that works very well for some people. And in some countries, interestingly, one of our members, Martin from London, says, this is the only kind of sponsorship that is used in England. So there are differences around the world, and that's something I think for us to be aware of. I'm really glad we have people from around the world on our drafting committee. There are one-on-one relationships that are temporary. It could be a mentor. There is a six-week mentoring project right now. There's a trifold that's being finalized that would show what that mentorship relationship would look like. But it's essentially an introduction to the program on a short-term basis. Closed study groups, many of you are aware of. That can be a 12-step group from the Yellow Book. It could be a laundry list book. But any of those meetings not only give us support for the work, but they also help us feel more secure. So many people coming out of those groups then feel that they can offer support to someone else. And that, of course, is what we hope for. We hope that these kinds of study groups will help us build confidence in people to be able to offer support to others. Long distance support, I'll just put in a word for that. When I was at the World Conference in Malmo, I met a woman from Moscow. And so for well over a year, we've been talking on Skype every Thursday afternoon. Of course, you have to work on the time difference, et cetera. But we can work with others very effectively on Skype. And it's something that we can, bear in mind. We don't need to be, and certainly now with the virus, many of us are not sitting across from a table from each other. I think that's pretty much what I want to say. Again, I'm just going to flip through here so you can see that we do talk about working with a mentor. We talk about recovery buddies. Just one final word on that. So I have a recovery buddy to whom I speak every Monday afternoon. We're not doing program work in the sense of looking at a step, but when she says to me, how is it going? And I tell her, well, I had a program success this week, but I also had a program challenge. We talk about our lives in the context of solving them through program. And that's something that's available to all of us. It's very, very powerful. And that's a telephone relationship. That's not face-to-face. So here's a table of contents. Again, you're gonna see it's massive. It talks about lots of different benefits of working with a supporter. And hopefully it also helps challenges to asking for support. So take a look at that. Again, as I mentioned, we are working on the committee. We're working on a survey. We will get that to you and ask for your reaction to this excerpt. But we really wanted to share with you the thinking of where we're going on the sponsorship committee so we can get your reactions to that. And also get your shares, because we will have a lot of fellowship shares that will ultimately work their way into this document. And I personally am really looking forward to hearing what you all have to say about sponsorship. So that's it for me. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Christine.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you, Christine.
All righty. So next we will hear from Louis B. He's an adult child from Florida who attends True Colors Meeting and New Hope Beginners Meetings. He serves on several WSO literature projects, including literature evaluation subcommittees, Getting Started, Development Team, Spiritual Inclusion, Working Group, and Writer/Project Manager, a New Hope Beginners Meeting Handbook. So Lewis, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Jackie. And hello, everyone. I'm Lewis. Christine and Liz and those involved with putting this on, thanks for asking me to share some of my experience, strength, and hope with you. I'm appreciative that I'm here. So I'm the first one to kick off the share, so it always feels a little bit daunting, but here we go. So I'm going to start by saying this is a challenging topic for me. And I know it's true for a number of people. They have very strong ideas about, you know, what it looks like to give and receive help. And the different terminology, different people feel very different ways about that. And I was actually involved in the sponsorship committee for a while and participated with it and ultimately had to step away because I was getting so triggered with it. But before I left, I felt like I was heard, and I really appreciate that. And I also feel like I was able to contribute. When I saw that the working title of the document, I felt as though a piece of me was in that. And for me, mostly I have issues with the idea of there being specific roles with titles. That's sort of where I've come to with it. And my suggestion to the group was, what if we could just sort of step away slightly to whatever degree possible and just sort of look at what does it mean to help or support someone and what does it mean to receive help or support in the program? So I feel like that is a part of the direction that the group went, and I'm grateful for that. So I feel like I was heard and I was able to contribute something with that. So with that, what I can say is I'm 5+ years in ACA. I have a little bit of experience in some other programs. I was involved with AA a little bit, involved with Al-Anon a little bit. But my recovery work has been through ACA, and it's been a very intensive 5-year period for me. I 6 years ago stopped drinking alcohol. Through this process, I also stopped smoking, so I gave up nicotine. I also quit caffeine. I was also on antidepressants and benzodiazepines for 25 years. I'm no longer on those. And I've also done very intensive traits work because I see those as medicators also. I see those as process addictions. And so I see the last 5 years for me as going through a really intensive detox process, quite honestly. And so where a lot of people I know come into ACA and they've done a lot of their addictions recovery work in other programs, I've basically done it all in ACA. And that's not something I see with a lot of other people, but that's been my experience. And what I can also say is in this work that I've done in ACA, I have never been a sponsor for someone else, and I've never had a sponsor. And so for those that say that's a required part of our program, I say that's not been true for me. And I've been able to do some really powerful work outside of that framework and outside of that context. Before I get too much into what it is that I've done, which I do want to share, just a little bit on my history and my perspective, and that is that I grew up in a 12-step household. So I'm 50 now, but when I was about 8 or 9 years old, that's when my dad found Al-Anon and my mom found AA. And so I was the oldest of 3, and around age 10 or 11, I was dragged to Alateen, right? So, and I say dragged because we definitely did not want to go. We did not want to go to that meeting. And for me, I remember it felt like the people were scary. Honestly, it felt scary to me. I came from a household where everything looked really good on the outside, right? Very sort of professional parents and all of that stuff. And what happened was, even though my parents both entered into the recovery programs, you know, the dysfunction continued and people don't heal right away. And so what happened for me was that a lot of the language of 12-step programs and the language and the framework of that, I say, was weaponized in some ways. It was used in ways that were part of control and the dysfunction that we talk about in our childhoods when those things are abounding. So a lot of the 12-step language in general was really difficult for me. Luckily, I came to ACA and I felt like there was enough distance, enough of a step back of a non-traditional aspect of a 12-step program that I was able to stay and I was able to do the work that I needed to do. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful for everyone that came before me and had some insight in certain ways that allowed things to click for me in profound ways. So what I can say is with my parents, they were both achievers. They were both rescuer type folks, and they both had a full plate of sponsors the whole time. And so when I was young and I was a kid and I needed parents, the way that I first encountered sponsorship was that's what takes my parents away from me. That they, looking back, what I can see is they're both adult children and they were just completely lost in their traits is what was going on. They were lost in their sense of over-responsibility. They were lost in their rescuing. They were lost in their addiction to excitement. They were lost in all of the traits behaviors, and that's what was playing out. And especially for my mom, who was the alcoholic, again, looking back, it became clear to me from my perspective, what was going on was they were substituting one addiction for another. And while she was trying to step away from alcohol, she was stepping into a lot of other distractions that from an ACA perspective, she died when I was 26. She died of alcoholism and she was never able to be with herself and to look at these issues. And granted, it was a different time. This was the 80s and ACA was very young and not out there, but that's what happened. She got very caught up in, and again, it's not just the program, you know, that I want to say her death was not a result of AA, but what I can say is her adult child issues got lost in that mix. And I would say even perhaps even exacerbated it. So I come from that perspective. And so I just wanted to put that out there. That's been my history and that's what I've seen. I will also say that I see those same dynamics around me today. And I see people who can get very lost in focusing on other people. And you know, there's a caution in the big red book. And you know, I think I was debating whether or not I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it. So yes, there are places. It says first thing you need to do, get a sponsor. But there's paradoxes, if we don't want to call them contradictions within the big red book. We can say paradoxes. But yeah, on page 369 then they're going to have the sponsorship committee did not believe the AA method adequately addressed the tendencies of the ACA personality, namely our over-reliance on others for direction and approval and our tendency to try to manage someone else's life. And so for me, I saw those tendencies very clearly when I first came into the program. I knew my tendency was to come in and start focusing on other people. I also know that I had a tendency with authority figures to either say, please just tell me what I need to do. Tell me what's going on. What do I need to do to feel better? Just guide me through this process. Just lay it out here. You know, just do that for me. Or eventually, usually what it turned out to be is you don't know what the hell you're talking about and why are you trying to tell me what to do, right? And sort of that caught in between those places. And so that's the authority issues that I came into this program with. And so what I can say is thankfully here in Gulfport, Florida, we've got about 18 groups in the Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater area. And of those groups, quite a few people don't do sponsorship. That's just sort of how things are done here. Was that a time warning?
That was a 5 minute, yeah.
Great, thank you. So what I can say is what I found was, I think in the model title, it was calling it, what was it, a group? It was, well, we call them working groups. I think step studies, I think, or a study group. So we call them working groups here, but that's what I found when I came here. That's what I was directed towards. And that's what worked really well for me. And so I've, in the last 5 years, I've done, 3 times through the yellow workbook and I've done them as part of step studies and each, these are intensive. So it's groups of 4 to 8 people usually get together and we meet weekly. And, the first time it took me about 12 months. The second time it took us about 2 years and the last time about 15 months. So we just intensively go through this together. And what I would say is the thing that, so it was not looking for one person to be an authority. It was the group sort of became that authority. And, it's sort of hard to describe that, but we sort of understand it as that group conscience. I was able to trust a group conscience more than I was a single person. And I think that's really sort of why it worked for me, why it's worked so well. So just to sort of give an illustration of sort of, I think, why. So, you know, I'd done therapy and stuff a couple times And, you know, looked at some of the issues and stuff. And a therapist would say, you know, you were abused as a child. And I'd say, yeah, okay, I got that. And, you know, I could even talk about some of the things that happened. And I love in our literature, I think they refer to those as disembodied stories. So I was very good at telling disembodied stories. And I could tell them very matter-of-factly. And what happened for me in the 12-step work groups, and again, as I was doing the three times through the yellow workbook, I also did the traits workbook. I'm on my second time through that. So I've used the same model for that. But what happened was, especially early on, I would see someone and I could see someone else in the group answering one of the questions in the workbook. And they were telling a disembodied story. They were telling a story that was so horrific and they were just telling it very matter-of-factly. And I could see how every other person sitting at that table, sitting in that circle, was looking at that person with horror, right? Like, what are you saying? This is awful. What you're saying is awful. And that person was just sort of matter-of-factly like, this is just something that happened. And I could see that denial. I was like, oh, that's what denial looks like. And then the next person, you know, would answer the question. They would share. And they would share their own disembodied story, right? Well, you know, I was doing this and, you know, I was hit, but, you know, it wasn't that big a deal. And this is what was going on. And everyone around that table was looking at that person with horror, including myself. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is horrific. And I could see, again, I could see what denial looked like. And then it was my turn, right? Over and over again, this happened. It was my turn. And I would tell a story and I was just telling what happened, right? This is just what happened. And I looked around the table and everyone else was looking at me with horror in the same way that I could see them looking with those other people. And something clicked with me, having multiple people looking at me in that way. That's what helped me break out of denial. For me, I don't think that would have worked with just one person who I was working with. It needed to be a holding space with multiple people and having that interaction. And that's then the power that was able to break me out of that denial. And so that's been some of the deepest healing that I've ever experienced in my life. And through those connections, I have built lasting relationships, right? So for me, the term fellow traveler is just sort of, at least in our area, it's basically anyone involved with ACA, right? It's like, are you a fellow? I'm a fellow traveler. We're all together. We're in ACA, right? And then I sort of realized that there's some people who I consider to be more trusted fellow travelers. And through this, I also have come to call them recovery partners. And so, you know, I don't sponsor people and people don't sponsor me, but I have five people I talk to every week. And some people will call that co-sponsorship. You can call it what you want, but it's a mutually trusting, beneficial relationship. And so for me, the biggest question actually is if I'm going to question sort of the sponsor model, thank you, Liz. It's really the question is what about newcomers? Because there's going to be that power differential. And that's to me where potentially dangerous things can happen. And so I've been focusing my work on working with beginners groups and trying to get beginners groups started. And as some of you know, we came up with a publication that has been actually over 2,000 people have downloaded it in the last 3 months. So it's gotten a good reception. But in that, in one of the appendices there, we talk about sort of this model of doing the step work groups and stuff. And we started a meeting on Sundays and it's been maxing, the Zoom meetings are maxing out over 100 and stuff. So it's a different way to look at things and it seems to be resonating with people. And so while I have my biases, I have my fears and my cautions around creating these roles in ACA. And, but I also realize that that's going to be happening. It's here to stay. That's a part of 12-step programs and that some people are going to be drawn to that and that may work best for them. So anyway, I'm here to advocate that not everyone has to do that. I haven't done that. I found different ways to do my recovery and I've had powerful results from that. So we'll continue to explore and appreciate the opportunity to share with you today. Thank you.
Thanks, Louis. And next we'll hear from Justine F. She's an adult child from Pennsylvania/New Jersey. Justine serves as chair of Pennsylvania Intergroup and the chair of a newly formed Northeast region of ACA. She also serves on the WSO sponsorship committee. Justine, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you to Connecticut Intergroup for doing this, for giving us a forum to introduce these concepts and to whoever at WSO was willing to partner with us. And thanks so much to the sponsorship team, committee, subcommittee, working group, whatever we are, it has been a pleasure. I knew that I wanted, when this was first brought up, in response, I think, to a ballot proposal a couple years ago, I knew that I wanted to get involved with this because my reactions to this whole thing, this whole sponsoring thing, have been very strong since I first came back into program. I attended a meeting and in the very beginning, and I really wanted a sponsor. I'm supposed to get a sponsor. I need a sponsor. And there was a guy, a gentleman who seemed very attractive in the beginning and turned out to be a known predator in multiple fellowships. And there was a woman who was also a qualified sponsor who terrified me, absolutely scared the hell out of me. And I later grew to love and respect her very much. But in the beginning, there was no way I was asking her to help me. And then after I went through the steps, I can be a sponsor. I can be a sponsor now. And by then I was in a meeting with a bunch of people who didn't want to sponsor. They didn't want to ask. And it seems to be a phenomenon here in the Northeast that we have, on the one hand, people who do not want to work with a sponsor, you know, another authority figure. And then we have a whole group of people who are like, I need a sponsor and there are none. What do I do? In fact, I received an email a couple weeks ago from somebody from my home group who asked just that question. And I in the beginning, I didn't know what the hell to say. Like, we've done all this work and it has turned into this huge, wonderful thing, but how to communicate that in an email, right? So I'm very grateful that we have this format, this forum here today. I have worked initially, the first time I went through the steps and did any work, it was with a very small group of women who wanted to do the work and didn't know how to get started. And like any step group, we started out with this number and then we ended up with this tiny number. But it was, I'm still in touch with those women and still feel very connected with them to this day, almost 7 years later. And then at what is now my home group, we started another step group and yet another group of people who I grew to feel very connected with, who I trust, which is something I had not had in my life before ACA. I would have been hard pressed to name one person I implicitly trusted. And now there are a dozen people who know my story that I was able to be vulnerable with and honest with, and look around the room and just see acceptance and love reflected back in those eyes. And that's a powerful thing for me in recovery. That idea that other people know my story and see me raw and not only get it, but accept me. I remember walking into a meeting when my son was at the height of his addiction and I was a mess. I was crying and I was angry and I was frustrated and I've been coming to these meetings for a couple of years now and I'm not any better and blah, 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 blah. And I threw out all this stuff and 12 people looked at me and said, "Hi, Justine." And I just started to laugh because the miracle of that, that I can be a hot mess and still have a place to bring that where I feel safe, is for me one of the miracles of ACA. And being able to work with others is in itself one of the biggest changes in my life through ACA. And it doesn't have to, it's not because I had a fabulous sponsor or because I sponsored others, and although I have, and grew so much, it's just the nature of these connections, these relationships that I've been able to build over the years. And I hope that others that I've been in relationships with have gotten something out of it. But, you know, my recovery is mine, and I can only speak to the fact that I have grown through health issues and relapse and a whole bunch of personal situations, job changes and moving and changes in my marital status. ACA has sustained me, and not the program has sustained me, though it has, but the people have sustained me. The main difference between me going through any kind of hardship or life change or stressor now and me going through that 10 years ago before I came back into program is the people, that I have people around me that I trust now. There's a woman that we are co-sponsors, and she is one of the first people to hear of all of this nonsense with me. And then I have a recovery partner in Pennsylvania that has been my cheerleader and my dear friend in recent months. And you know what? For me, that's all it takes. I don't need a sponsor. I don't need something prescribed for me on paper. I need trusted people that I can reach out to when something's going wrong, and get that response. You know, that sometimes I just need someone to listen, and sometimes I want advice, and sometimes someone says, you know, you're doing a fabulous job, and that uplifts me. And for me, that's what these connections and what these relationships are about. That's the most important part of it for me and my recovery, that I have a place to go. And really what I mean is a person or a number of people to go to for acceptance and love, someone to bear witness to the struggle that I might be having today or to the success that I had, and let me know that I'm not alone, that I am going through this with others. We may not have started in the same place, and we may not have been on this recovery path for the same amount of time, but we are definitely and committedly in this together. I absolutely cherish the relationships that I have built in ACA. Because they're the only honest and true relationships maybe that I have had. Being in a relationship with somebody in ACA is also for me about service. These are opportunities for me to work through my traits and my ineffectual responses to life and the world around me in a safe place. And
5 minutes.
Thank you. Thanks for your service and timing. It's just all of this has been a gift and a blessing for me in stronger and less strong moments as I have gone through and continue to go through recovery. The most important thing that I would like to suggest and wish I had said to the person who emailed me is, and to every person, because in my involvement with the region and especially in the inner group, and now my involvement with one of the a New Hope Beginners meetings, I am getting these requests for, you know, what do you do? Now I've done my 6 meetings. What do I do about a sponsor? Particularly from those who have come to ACA from other fellowships. If there is no one, if you cannot find someone who is willing to stand up and call themselves your sponsor, please do not let that prevent you from finding someone to come out of isolation and work this program with, or maybe several someones, maybe a group. But the one of the things that I think we've come to in working as a sponsorship team to develop new literature and new ways of thinking about this is that the most important part of it is the coming out of isolation and working with others. It doesn't matter so much what that looks like or what that is called, but that we now have a vehicle for developing trusting, loving, respectful, supportive relationships with each other. And you can build that for yourself however it works for you. If you want and can find a sponsor, that's fantastic. If you are working in a group of people, that's terrific for all of you. If you have recovery partners or fellow travelers or mentors, good for you. Good for you all. As long as the work gets done and you feel safe and heard and respected, I think that's one of the greatest gifts we can give each other. I think that's all I've got. Thank you for the opportunity to share on a very, very important topic for me, and I hope for all of us. Thanks also for being here to listen. There are over 100 of us here in this room, and that is exciting for me. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Justine.
Thank you, Justine.
So our last speaker today is Sue V of Toronto. Sue's home group is Scarsborough East ACA and was co-chair of the 2018 WSO ABC/AWC. She is a member of the Greater Toronto and Area Intergroup. Her service is in WSO includes chair of global member subcommittee and a member of the sponsorship committee. All right, Sue, you're up.
Alrighty, thank you so much. And thank you, Kinetic Intergroup and WSO and panelists and my fellow ACA fellow travelers. I am a grateful adult child. I came into ACA, I'm in my 10th year now, and I came into ACA where I was filled with rage. I was filled with resentment. I had tried everything to work through my childhood piece. I'm the eldest of eight, and both my parents were very ill with alcoholism at different stages and also highly dysfunctional. And it was really, really hard. I went to Alateen. It did help me a bit knowing that we weren't the only family that was kind of insane. And I had tons and tons of counseling, and I thought I could leave all this behind, and I became a workaholic and became very successful in helping dysfunctional work groups to navigate through those. And I fell in love with a fellow wounded person, workaholic, plus very wounded childhood as well. And we raised two children. And to my shame and my embarrassment, I found myself back in that same place of violence and abuse. And it was just heartbreaking for me, and just triple shame all around. And it wasn't until my husband did pass on and got more counseling, and it wasn't until I became menopausal and my kids turned into teenagers and my worst fear was going to be realized. They were experimenting with alcohol and drugs, and my mind went to death and I became an insane mother, trying to save them, and almost killed my relationship with them. Today it's much better, but the reason it is much better is ACA. My daughter tells me that ACA brought her mother back to her, is what she said. When I came in, I was a mess. I kind of liked the fact I was familiar with 12 steps because of Alateen, and I've been to so many 12 AA 12-step meetings, medallions and so forth, so I kind of know that stuff generally, and so that kind of felt familiar. But I got to tell you, the first couple of years I cried almost nonstop through the program. And I would say the first level of support I received was on the first night. And it was from an old timer who obeyed the no crosstalk, said, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" And I said, "Yes." "Can I give you a hug?" "Yes." And for the first time in 2 weeks, when I had a major crisis in my home, he was the first person that made me feel I wasn't going to be I wasn't insane, and I wasn't going to have to check myself into a psychiatric hospital because I was just falling apart with something that had happened. And he just said, you can't be reacting any other way than what you are doing right now. It's okay. Keep coming back. It works." And I found hope. And that's why one of the things that I'm really a believer on is when our newcomers come in, is answering questions, providing whatever support they may want. And if they don't want it and they want to go away, that's fine. That's really important to me. And the meetings themselves, that's the first time I understood me. I had clarity about me. I was listening to people, and somebody was going on about authority figures and police and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh my God, that's me. That's why I have this insane reaction, when a knee-jerk, angry reaction, defiant towards police, doctors, teachers. I never understood that about me. But in ACA, I realized that that was me. And so from a support perspective, going to the meetings, that's my first thing that I did. It's the first thing I tell people. Keep coming back to the meetings. Listen and share as much as you can, because I feel like I've lost 500 pounds of weight, a psychological weight, by coming to meetings. And the next thing I did was I went into a step study. I was really lucky in our fellowship. The Yellow Book was only a couple of years old. And they were running step studies constantly. And so I just jumped on one. And it was like 25, 30 people. Oh my God. And in the middle of it is, go for a sponsor. Go for a sponsor. Get your fifth step done. And I thought, hell no. I'm not doing that. And so I went through the 12-step study, and it was phenomenal. It was painful. And at the end of it, it was so fast. We do them 18, 20 weeks, and that's good because I was able to go through it all. And I've done 9 step studies, by the way, now. I learned so much more about myself every time I do one. And in the step study, again, the amazing number of people sharing and me sharing and understanding of each other. And that was so helpful for me. At the end of my 12-step study, I thought, okay, Sue, what about this sponsorship thing, you know? And I made a decision then, and it was just, it's a very personal, private one, and I haven't really shared. I share it with my other people on one-on-ones, but not in a group. But I'll say this to you. I said to myself, Sue, if you're really going to do step 1, 2, and 3, you surrender. You might want to consider this. You might want to consider finding somebody who's got some lived ACA experience that might be able to show you a little bit about what's to happen coming forward in the future and what you could be doing. And I just put myself together, and I looked around, and there weren't many people. There was only one woman that only had 2 or 3 years. And she said to me, I don't know if I could do this or not. I've been trying, but sometimes, you know, it's not been working. And I said, if you would try, I will try. And why I wanted to do it is I needed to surrender and be vulnerable to someone who I felt I could trust. And I did. And she was very trustworthy. And I didn't want to be rescued. And I didn't want to have to rescue her. I didn't want to be distracted by having to take care of her. And so after the the steps. She said, I know the 12 steps. I've been through a few studies now and I could do that. And I said, great, I'm aboard. And we did the 12 steps together. And she said, we're equals. This is, you know, I'm sponsoring you, but we're equals and we're going to share experience, strength, and hope. And I'll share where I've been in this journey, where you are right now. And if that resonates, it does. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And we'll just go through it. And we did. And she taught me a lot about myself, because I, in step 8, didn't even put myself on there. And nobody in the 12 steps said, put yourself, the first person you should put on the harms list is yourself. Nobody said that in this 12-step study. I never thought about it. This person did. And she said, number one, I want you to put yourself first on the harms list right now. And so she was able to really help me in my first year, not because she told me what to do, because I would have walked away, because there's no way people tell me what to do. But because she was able to stay present with me and just share her own experience, strength, and hope and where she was in her journey, which was only 2 or 3 years ahead of me. And I am forever grateful to her. And at the end of that 12 steps that we worked on, she said, okay, you've graduated. Congratulations. Now you're going to sponsor me. So now I'm learning co-sponsorship. And I said, whoa, 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 I got a lot more recovery here to do. But I helped her with some 12-step study, 12-step stuff at that point, a little that I knew. But I just shared my own experience, strength, and hope. Great equalizer. I called it the leapfrog. She helped me. I helped her. She helped me. We just worked through it. But I was still hungry for recovery. I knew I was being triggered by the laundry list like crazy. And I didn't know what to do about it other than a little bit from the BRB with Become Your Loving Parent, but it still wasn't enough for me. And no one in my fellowship knew enough about it. And there wasn't any trait book out at that point. Higher power provided. New group started, laundry list. They brought in the BRB. They brought in Tony A's book and his steps, because I was so angry about step 5, I got to tell you, what do you mean about admitting my wrongs? I've been wronged. My inner child's been wronged. Let's go there first. And he said, thanks. And he says, admit the childhood abandonment. Okay, I could get around that. I can get around that one. And so there's my next indirect sponsorship is my laundry list meeting group. And I attended that. And it was hard. It was painful. People were sharing and I could see myself in the room and I shared and shared, but I couldn't find a direct sponsor because there wasn't anybody who could do that. But I found indirect sponsorship through my meeting groups and through the studies that I've been doing. And I would say then the next thing happened with me is people started coming to me and saying, Sue, can you help me with my ACA recovery? Can you be my sponsor? Can you hear my step 5? And so my thing was, okay, are you going to meetings? Because if you're not going to meetings, there's not much I can do because I'm not here to help you. I'm only one person in your whole network. And the way I operate is it takes a village to raise a child. It took an ACA village to raise me. And so I need a network of people. And so sometimes it's the study group, sometimes it's the meeting group, sometimes it's the sponsor. Sometimes it's helping someone else. And to my amazement, every time that I've helped support someone in their journey, I get 1,000 back. I get deeper in my own recovery. Something else happens that, oh, that's me. Oh my God. Okay. I got that now. I'm conscious. Step 1, 2, and 3, 4 inventory. And so it was really, really helpful to do that. So I don't believe in one way of for me anyway, for ACA recovery, it just didn't work. I do different things from sponsors to being a sponsor, to being a sponsee, which was very good for me, to indirect meeting groups, to studies, laundry list studies, step studies. And I got to tell you, the last one, service really helped me in my ACA recovery 1,000-fold. Whatever I put in, 1,000-fold I get back in my ACA recovery because I'm triggered like crazy. And I have to then come back and work my ACA recovery with that. And I do that through groups, through individuals. I'll ask for help and I'll go to someone. I'm really struggling with this. I need your help. and I get the help. And someone else will say, I need your help, Sue. I'll give them the help. And I've been doing a lot of service sponsorship. I'll end with that, which is mixing, adding, combining service and ACA recovery together, because that's really been helpful for me, and I share that. So I believe in giving away what we have, and that's all that I've been doing. And for me, that's what sponsorship, fellow traveler, connections, it's all about healing and finding the best way, not the best way, but the best ways for me to heal. And it's many, many different ways with many, many different people. And I'm ever so grateful. So thank you for listening. And I think I made my time.
Thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Sue. Thanks
so much to all the speakers.
Thanks, Sue.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Sue.